Good morning. I am Dr. Christina Hines with you this Brass Tacks Sunday, the 7th of March 2021. And today we have a very useful and interesting lineup of people to speak to you about Caribbean regionalism today. Is it still useful or is this futile? What is the purpose of Caribbean regionalism in the times in which we live? So on our panel today, we have our own Peter Wickham. Everybody knows Peter, so I don't think he needs a lot of introduction, but he is a political consultant, analyst, and talk show moderator, as we know. We also have Dr. Kay Ann Skeet, and she's a trade research fellow at the University of the West Indies, Cave Hill campus. We have Megan Thibbolds, and she is the recently selected, one of them, CARICOM Youth Ambassador. We had the other Youth Ambassador with us a few weeks ago as well. We have Leo Preville, and he is the CSME Program Manager from the CARICOM Secretariat. And we will also have joining us Mr. Salas Hamilton, and he is a Communication Specialist at CARICOM, the CARICOM Secretariat as well. So to start things off, I would like to just say a little bit about regionalism in the Caribbean. So we may think CARICOM is the beginning and end of Caribbean regionalism, but that's not quite accurate. So if we look further back, a lot of us would know of the British West Indies Federation that existed between 1958 and 1962 and met its demise with some countries deciding to leave the Federation. We may also know of the Caribbean Free Trade Association, CARIFTA, in existence from 1968 to 1972, and CARICOM being established thereafter in 1973. But there are also colonial formations of groupings of what today some are Caribbean states. Not all of them are states, not all are independent. So we had the Leewards Federation, Windwards Federation, efforts to join the two and include Barbados, which resulted in the 1870 Confederation riots in Barbados. So there is a longer history to this. And we also have the OECS, Organization of Eastern Caribbean States, established in 1981, and the Association of Caribbean States, established in 1994. Since the creation of CARICOM as well, it has gone beyond this idea that it is English-speaking or Commonwealth Caribbean states exclusively, and now includes Haiti since 1998, Suriname before since 1995, and there are associate members, which are also not states, right? Cayman Islands, Bermuda, BVI. So we have this history of regionalism, but what does it do for us today? As a song once said, what have you done for me lately? What has regionalism done for us lately? So I would like to welcome our panelists to start this discussion. Introduce yourself a little bit if you would like to tell us some more about how you come to this topic, and to go straight in by telling us what is the usefulness of Caribbean regionalism today in a very broad sense. Let's start with Leo Preville.
Hi, good morning, Christina. Good morning, other colleagues on the panel, and of course to all persons listening to us this morning on, I think it is Voice of Barbados, if I'm correct.
That's right.
Yes, I am. Great. To come straight to the question, Caribbean regionalism is perhaps even more relevant today than ever. If ever there was need for Caribbean regionalism, I think today is the time. In fact, you would recall, Dr. Hines and friends, that one of the questions that the government of Jamaica posed very early was to make a determination for itself as to whether, what did it see the future of CARICOM looking like for it as a member state. And it came out of that exercise clearly indicating for itself and its people that CARICOM was perhaps even more relevant today. So we have a study, in fact, confirming that But as an ordinary man in the street, a layperson, what do you think? Well, put it this way. With COVID-19, we have seen examples of what how the rest of the world has responded when faced with a crisis. We had disruptions in supplies because, for instance, simple examples, supplies of food.
Right.
Chicken. We all eat chicken. Most of us, that is. And when our major suppliers of chicken realized that their own supply systems are disrupted and they needed to feed their population, what did they do? They said, basically, look, we have to take care of ourselves. You are on your own, those of you who import from us. What is the purpose of CARICOM in this context? Well, the purpose of CARICOM is so that we would have built, through integration and through trade, a system that would have increased production among ourselves of chicken, among other commodities that we should be consuming, because these are things we consume daily and we have the capacity. So CARICOM is an arrangement that allows, because of its structure in terms of free movement of goods, free movement of people, right of establishment and so forth, it creates the opportunity for us to produce for ourselves in one region significant quantities of what are fundamental to our own survival, in terms of food at least. And therefore, when faced with a crisis from third parties or external to us as a region, we should be in a position to at least take care of our most immediate needs. And so that gives you a sense as to how important CARICOM is for us as a region. Just give it using the example of food to make the point, because you can all relate to that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Preville. Let's bring in some of our other panelists. And before I go any further, remember you can call in 434-1790, listeners, and you can also send us messages via WhatsApp at 266-4862 if you would like to join this discussion. Let's hear a youth perspective. Megan, what do you think the usefulness of CARICOM, Caribbean integration, not just CARICOM, Caribbean regionalism is today? Why would you want to be a CARICOM youth ambassador anyway? Do you see this pertinence of regionalism? Go ahead, Megan.
To answer your question in short, most definitely, obviously, because I am the CARICOM youth ambassador, so clearly I feel very strongly about it. And I do believe it's especially relevant for young people today because, as to echo my colleague, we've seen how countries respond, and we see that we are extremely vulnerable not only to climate change, not only to adverse weather and how that can impact or devastate our economies virtually overnight, but now we're seeing that in a crisis, a lot of countries tend to turn inwards. And for young people, we can see the impact that this is having on our economy. Unemployment has always been high for young people, and it's even higher now because of the crisis. And for me, the only way that we can move forward is if we lean on each other, not just nationally and within our local communities, but reach across the ocean to lean on our island neighbors to see how young people in particular can come together to advance the idea that regionalism is important, and that is one of the only ways that we are going to be able to succeed in the future, because we need to figure out how to navigate a post-COVID environment. And I don't think that as individuals or individual islands, we can do that alone. So for me, I will definitely be continuing that. I will be championing that cause and pushing for it to the last days of my life, because I feel very strongly about it.
Okay, Megan, well, thank you. Thank you for that. Let's hear some of our analysts' perspectives. Dr. Skeet, Mr. Wickham, what are your thoughts?
Good morning again, panelists and to the listening public. Most definitely, CARICOM regionalism, Caribbean regionalism on a whole has saved us money. It has saved us time. It has provided us with a pool of technical experts in key areas such as climate change, security, and public health. And more importantly, from my own experience, it has educated myself and generations to come with CXC and the youth.
Hello? Hello, Can, we're not hearing you. Go ahead.
You hear me just now, Christina?
The last thing I heard is CXC.
Okay, yes, and it has educated us with CSC and the UE, and it has provided opportunities for us to seek employment across the Caribbean, whether it be as a service provider or as someone looking to set up a business in any of the other member states. So that's quick points that I can think of off the bat.
So, okay, so everybody has the positive perspective. Regionalism is working and well and is providing us with some great things. Mr. Wickham?
Yeah, no, I'm going to be the one person that looks at the other issue, because I don't think there can be any question that regionalism is important. Certainly the logic isn't lost on me. I believe I'm one of very few people that is genuinely employed regionally and works across right. this region. So the logic isn't lost on me. But look, I think that it's one thing for us to talk about the theoretical benefits and, you know, all the peaches and cream. But we have to deal with the reality, and the reality is that regionalism has to navigate some serious problems that we have across the region. And in that regard, we've been having some challenges. Look at insularity. The Barbados Green Paper on Immigration Reform came up, I believe it was 2009 or 2010. And in my opinion, that was a slap in the face of regionalism. Essentially, it was one government that was responsible for the single market and economy saying, look, I have some concerns, and they were essentially looking to turn the clock back on the regional movement. The Green Paper on Immigration Reform in Barbados is an important document for anyone who is interested in regionalism to read, because it was running in the complete opposite direction that we assumed that we were going as a region. Then let's look at COVID. How have we responded to this COVID thing as a region? Has the regional platform been more effective in helping us to procure vaccines? Or have we been more successful with what we saw was the Trinidad, Barbados, Dominica Alliance that was able to procure vaccines from India on a bilateral basis ahead of time? Because that seemed to have been more effective. And certainly it was then for Barbados, sort of goodwill and Dominica, to share some of those vaccines around. LIAT is the huge elephant in the room. LIAT was supposed to be a genuine regional organization. And I think the demise of LIAT says a lot about the issues within regional transport, but more importantly, the type of selfishness that still permeates the region as far as these issues are concerned. Regionalism has proven itself woefully inadequate to deal with that. I'm very unhappy about the Caribbean Examinations Council at this point in time. And I noted that one of the other analysts thought that the CXC was a high point. In my opinion, yes. Right now, the CXC is a block. When I watch the way in which the Caribbean Examinations Council has now started the process of forcing Caribbean students into examinations for which they're clearly ill-prepared, and it doesn't appear as though there's a regional structure to harness or bridle CXC from running along this path, it tells me that regionalism is in some problems. And then, I could write a thesis on the University of the West Indies.
Don't and, write and it the challenges not yet, please, because I still need my employment there.
But when and I'm gonna just end on this one. the Jamaica was mentioned earlier, and you know the Jamaican study by one of their former prime ministers was really a question of Jamaica looking at the relevance of this regional thing, and it came on the heels of some pretty harsh treatment by Jamaicans at the hands of Trinidad and Tobago, Jamaicans who were going to Trinidad to look for work. And we're essentially being deported. And Jamaica started saying, is this thing working for me? So while I think that it's important for us to look at all of the great things that have been happening and then the great theories of mm-hmm. regionalism that have been working well, what we have to do is, I think at this time, we have to ask ourselves, how can our regional institutions be engineered to help to respond to some of these major challenges that are facing us? And this list of things that I issued is just really the start. What are we doing at the regional level to be able to deal with the realities of life in 2021?
Okay, thank you so much for that. And you have touched on a lot of the things I had noted here to bring up. So thank you for doing that for me. So it flows very well into the communications. We have the communication specialist here from the CARICOM Secretariat, CSME unit, Salas Hamilton. Mr. Hamilton, please go ahead, and would you like to respond to anything that Mr. Wickham just brought to the table?
Good morning, everyone, and good morning those listeners to Voice of Barbados at this time. I don't know if Peter has said anything that is not true. And if I had to take away one statement, it would be that Peter agrees with regionalism, and he has pointed out some issues that may need tweaking and correcting.
Right.
Institution, let's take CSC, that may have had one or two issues and not look at the decades of success it has given maybe all of us here who are products of CXC in one form or the other. And the same thing with UPI and the other institutions he mentioned. And Peter's wrapping up comments were in fact just that. He spoke about that regionalism is still important, but the institutions may need to be reconfigured and tweaked in order to reach out in a meaningful way to the people of the community. So I don't know if I can say anything in terms of Peter's intervention, but my colleague Titus and Dr. Skeet and the CARICOM Youth Ambassador, they would have said some of the things I would have started out with as well. Do we have problems? Yes, we have problems. Do we sometimes seem as though we are fractured? Yes. Is it more frustration, things in place quicker and too incremental? I think that might be it.
Okay. Thank you all for your introductory comments. I have a colleague, Dr. Wendy Grenade. She was with us a few weeks ago as well. And one of the things that she generally says about CARICOM, she points out to it being prime ministerial and paper-based. I like to hear when she says that, prime ministerial and paper-based. Do you think that this is a problem for regionalism, the emphasis on, because I heard Peter did talk about CXC, and I did a little, I've been following this topic and I did some research into how these decisions are made. And I know there is a lot of criticism of CXC. We get a lot of criticism of the individual institutions. But when I look, what I read is that it is the ministers of education. So I can look directly at agreement reached on administration of 2021 regional examinations. This comes from CARICOM today, March 5th, 2021. And it says CARICOM ministers of education reached decisions on the 2021 administration of CAPE and CSEC during the 26th special meeting of the CARICOM Council for Human and Social Development. It says the ministers of education. So is it the prime minister and the delegates of the prime minister, the prime ministers of the region, that are actually making these decisions, and perhaps to the detriment of people across the region? Is this an issue? Do we need to change how CARICOM works and how regionalism in general works so that it can be more effective? Anyone can feel free to just have a go at that.
Yeah, no, Christina, one of my concerns is, you said it is prime ministerial and paper-based. I don't have a problem with the prime ministerial part of it. The paper-based issue is, I don't really fully understand, but what I think Wendy could be saying is that it is administratively heavy.
I think she's saying that a lot of it is on paper. We can see a lot of documents coming out of CARICOM, but what about the actions that we see?
Right, but my thing is that I find that CARICOM has become administratively heavy, in that it appears as though administration is a task in and of itself, and I think that a lot of it is about meeting and putting forward papers and ideas, and that to me becomes a task. So when you see CARICOM officials checking off activities, invariably the activities are meetings and conferences and those kinds of activities, which to me are not necessarily producing anything. And as far as the CXC is concerned, yeah, there's a Council of Ministers, but how is that Council of Ministers facilitated? The CXC has a huge administrative process of its own, and I think that if it is one problem that appears to me is that it has evolved with a level of independence, and same in University of West Indies as well, where it can provide for itself almost independently. CXC generates money from doing exams. So CXC has a disincentive against not doing exams because that's how CXC's survival is assured. Once it gets that revenue from exams, CXC has their own internal mechanism that can advise, that can administer. And essentially, when a minister gets to a meeting at the level of Caribbean Examinations Council, there's not really a whole lot that can be done to influence policy. Policy, you may say, is set at a ministerial level, but my sense is that the CXC has tons of advisors, they have tons of officials, and essentially it has the capacity to frame issues in a way that ministers are not really able to respond effectively at the end of the day.
Okay, well, let's come back to this. We have to take a break. Thanks so much. So when we return, we'll come back to this issue as to how are the decisions made within CARICOM. So.
You depend on BRC for genuine permaclad, colorclad, and permaseam steel roofing products. But did you know you can depend on BRC for installation too? That's right. BRC has several experienced roofing teams to handle your roof installation professionally, using tested and proven fasteners and methods with satisfaction guaranteed. When it comes to roofing, there's no substitute for experience, and BRC's crews will give you a great job at a great price. Have your roof installed by the experts. BRC.